Blog Talk Radio.
And that is the one and only Pancho Sanchez doing the Watermelon Man. Welcome to the K Thompson Live Show, everyone. I am the son. My name is Eric Payne. And tonight, today is the 25th. Today is actually the 25th of March, 2015. We have sad news to report this week about the passing of Dr. Yosef Benyakin, a black archaeologist, historian, extraordinaire. And well, let me introduce you and bring on the host of our show, the namesake of the show, Kay Thompson. You are
Kay Thompson.
And you've had a number of experiences with Dr. Ben over the years, Mom. You've interviewed him several times. And also, we're going to have Dr. Len Jeffries on tonight. But you had quite a good relationship with Dr. Ben, so we're going to let you and Dr. Jeffries pay tribute the correct way to Dr. Ben.
We are expecting Dr. Jeffries to call in any minute, so, but I'm going to tell you how I first met Dr. Ben. You know, really, whenever you did see him, when he was on television or radio, he was so impressive and so informational and so bright. He was a true scholar. And when I first met him, I absolutely recognized him when he was on that Gil Noble show, Life Is. And I was so moved by this show that.
Okay, we're going to start pick up where we had a technical glitch right there. But Ma, you want to continue talking about your experiences, your meeting with Dr. Ben?
That's right. When I first met Dr. Ben, I saw him on the Gil Noble show, Like It Is, and I was so impressed with him that I was doing the show on cable television, East Orange at the time. I invited him to the show. And he came in, and I also had invited a rabbi from West Orange. And, of course, when Dr. Ben started talking about the beginnings of man and the African history and the African early civilizations of Egypt and, you know, West Africa, this rabbi was very impressed. And he was very, very, not only impressed, but he was saying that he verified Dr. Ben's historical information that he had. So we called Dr. Ben and invited him on my early cable show. What the name of it was Information Exchange at that time. It was taping in East Orange and East Orange, New Jersey. And while we are waiting for, Len, I know you are holding on, but just wait a minute because I want to give the rest of this information. Dr. Yosef Ben-Yekin, and when I met him, Dr. Ben, before I met Gil Noble's show was on ABC, and it was shortly after Gil Noble wrote Black is the Color of My TV Tube. So that just gives you the information of how long ago this was. That was a show that he had that dealt with a very serious drug problem that was going on in our community. Shortly after that, I contacted Dr. Bill by way of Gil and invited him on my show. By that time, I was working for Channel 47, and then I went to Urban Notebook for WIB Radio doing the Black Breakfast Club, and had Dr. Ben on a number of different times. Each time, he talked about Egypt, the African present, the African presence of the beginnings of man, and I also know about the story of Lewis and Richard Leakey. They were anthropologists who, you know, discovered the early fossils of the beginnings of woman, you know, in the Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania, in West Africa. And the oldest fossils, how they knew it was of a woman, was because of the fact that they did all kinds of, you know, investigations and, you know, comparing bones and all that sort of thing. And they determined that the earliest fossil, the earliest person walking, was an African born in Africa. So I assume from that, and as we should assume from that, that the earliest people in the world or in that part of the world were African and had to be black. So So therefore, when you talked about baby Jesus, I had him on the show on Channel 47, and for the first time he talked about baby Jesus and talked about the first birth of Jesus, not white, but black. And he also talked about the Isis and the baby Horus, and that statue was it was put up in a statue in Portugal. And he said that, and as a matter of fact, he said that if you read the Times, the New York Times, you will see that someone in the New York Times writes about the statue of the baby Horus and the mother Isis, I think it was called. That was a black Madonna. And that this statue was in Portugal. Well, this is really a very strange story because of the fact that people were going to pray at the feet of the black Madonna, you know, in Portugal, and he said, yes, that's in the New York Times, and each Christmas they will mention it. And not too long after that, a neighbor of mine, a white woman who was living next to me at the time, I was talking to her about black Africa and the history of the black Madonna. And I asked her if she knew about this. And when she said that she did, I was in complete shock. She then said, oh, yes, I have a picture of the black Madonna and the baby when I went to Portugal. That picture is on my page on my computer. She sent it to me, and I was hoping to get that up to show you this picture because it really, it just kind of made it sort of concrete to me that this had actually happened. It's not that you don't believe it again, but you believe a lot of things once you really say them. So that Dr. Ben was an extraordinarily intelligent person. I just loved talking to him. I had him on several other TV shows at that time, and the one on cable television, that was New Jersey Press Conference, and I had him on several times. In fact, I've had a lot of videos with Dr. Ben and with Dr. Clark and Ivan Van Sertimer and Dr. Len Gunther. Now, those shows that I did with them I have a part one and a part two. And there's a great possibility that I might show some of that, you know, at some time over and over again. Because it is the first time that I've ever had the four of them on the show at one time. Well, by the way, Dr. Len Gunther is a nephew of Dr. Ben. So Dr. Ben, anthropologist, Egyptologist, historian, he visited the statues in Egypt. He was arranging big trips, got back and forth, and you all probably have seen some of the footage that Gil Noble has shown on his show Like It Is when he went to see the pyramids and the sphinxes and all that. So, and then shortly after that, I had interviewed a man who was a professor at Rutgers. His name was Dr. Ivan Van Sertimer. And he did a book that he sent me. The name of it was The African Presence in Ancient America. They Came Before Columbus. And he, lo and behold, verified and confirmed all the things that I had heard from Dr. Ben. And I had Dr. Van Sertimer on my show at WLIB on Urban Notebook. And he was so absolutely fascinating because he was saying all the things that Dr. Ben had said. And he said they came before Columbus, and he even had pictures of the African presence in ancient America. And he had the pictures of, and I'm looking at this book right now, of the African heads because they came to Mexico. And as a matter of fact, I could verify one of those heads because the fact that when I went to Mexico, and we went to, I don't know, some museum or some part of Mexico, I forget exactly which, but it was outside of Cancun to some little town there, and I saw these big, huge heads of this huge African, you know, looking man. And I said, my goodness, I said, this is, you know, confirms what Dr. Ben and Dr. Van Sertimer and Dr. Gunther, what they were saying at all that time. So it was quite a introduction to Dr. Ben. We became very, very, very good friends, and he would show up with a breakfast club on WLIB BLS, and he was one of the most fascinating persons that I have ever talked to. And it was through him that I got to, or to Dr. Our guest for today is Dr.
Ben Jeffries.
I'm waiting for him to say so. Dr. Ben Jeffries. Dr. Ben Jeffries. And you all know him because he is a noted scholar also. Hello, Ben. Are you there?
Okay.
Len Jeffries.
And you,
yes.
Well, I'll take it all. And you really gave us a fantastic introduction to this extraordinary brother, which also shows that you have been wide awake and on top of things for all these years. And actually, it's embarrassing to talk about our roots because they go back a little ways in terms of the struggles in Newark and Greater Newark. And I am certainly glad to be on your show and pleasantly surprised about the work of Dr. Ben and your contact with him and his relationship with others. And that needs to be emphasized, that his impact was enormous with many of us in what I call the Great Awakening. Real knowledge about African peoples was coming into our hands, and we were using it to elevate our people. And he, more than anyone else, carved out a sacred mission. He took upon himself a mission impossible to try to deal with the distortions of history, the big lie of white folks doing everything and Arab folk, etc., but black folk having contributed nothing. And then Dr. Ben took upon himself that he was going to raise up the truth and destroy that lie. And he did single-handedly, more than anyone else, zero in on the Nile Valley and claim it for African peoples. And so it's an extraordinary story of a young man who took upon himself an impossible task and developed what I call a sacred mission to restore our humanity and give us the truth. And once you tap into that truth, it changes you. You can tap away from it and be enfeebled, or you can tap into it and be empowered. And so he taught us what real power was. Knowledge is power. And he extraordinarily exposed so many of us. As you explained, the wide range, his relative, Dr. Len Gunther, was a stellar professor in New Jersey. And another Jersey brother of mine, because I'm from Newark, New Jersey, was Professor Ivan Van Sertima, and whose academic interest in anthropology was in the African presence in the Americas. But with Dr. Ben's push and Dr. Ben's direction, Ivan Van Sertima moved heavily into the Nile Valley. And then he, in 1979, came to us and said that he wanted to produce a journal of African civilization. And many of the established scholars said, well, we have enough journals. But all of us knew we didn't have enough journals on African civilization, focusing on the role of African peoples. So Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and others encouraged Ivan Van Sertima to produce what became the Journal of African Civilization. And extraordinary works that Dr. Ben influenced came out of that. The first issue of the journal was a pilot issue in 79, and then there was one in 81 that I also contributed to because we had a conference on early civilizations at the City College of New York. And the stellar stars of that conference in December 1980, was Dr. John Henry Clark and his great partner, Dr. Ben. Dr. Shekhunta Diop, we had invited, but he could not come. So I said, don't worry about that. We have the Dr. Clarks and the Dr. Bens. We have the Dr. Van Sertimas. We have the Dr. Len Jeffries. And we carried the day. In 1991, Dr. Ben asked many of us to accompany him to the Nile. So for the first time, I had a chance to go. And in 81, also a great scientific scholar of enormous note from Senegal, Cheikh Anta Diop. He produced his classic work, Civilization or Barbarism, affirming the origin of civilization and of humanity, of the evolution of society, of the cradle of civilization in the Nile Valley. So this great scientist, linguist, physicist, affirmed the classic works of Dr. Venn in the decades before. And so Van Sertima, in 1982, published his third issue or fourth issue of the Journal of African Civilization, and it was dedicated to Dr. Yosef Ben-Yochanan, affectionately called Ben, and Dr. Cheikh Anta Diop, the great scientist of African civilization and culture. I was asked to write the introduction, the article referencing Dr. Ben, and Ivan Van Sertima wrote the article in referencing Cheikh Anta Diop. So it's been a glorious march and a victorious one for our people, and Dr. Ben has been in the lead, so much so that he's even got lovely, talented, beautiful, sincere members of our community, like the lovely Kay Thompson and her family and a whole host of others, excited about history and culture and ready to stand up with information and also with the media component. And at some point, you'll be able to show, I'm sure, come up with a media segment of the work that Dr. Ben inspired that have been on many of the shows, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, fortunately, it would be fun to give you a chance to, you know, to take a breath. But fortunately, I have, you know, interviewed Dr. Ben on so many different shows that it's really hard to count. And I'm talking about the majority of them done on WLIB. A great number of them also were on the different television shows that I was on. And each time he was fascinating. I just hung on every word. You know, he told me so many things that I've forgotten a lot, so therefore I had to look up the book and I said, oh, I remember this, I remember that. He spoke so much about the people along the Nile. Can you expound on that, Len?
Yes.
Yeah.
One thing we need to, in order for me to handle the great work of the Dr. Benson and the Dr. Clarks and the Dr. Cheikh Anta Diops, and to teach it, I had to come up with a concept, an approach that would help the students grasp immediately the significance of these great works without years of background. And so I came up with the triangle shape of the pyramid and used that as a teaching tool.
Yeah.
So if you triangle the shape of the pyramid, you want to deal with thesis, the foundation of things, the opposite, the antithesis, and in relationship with the information around the thesis and the antithesis, you created a synthesis, a new body of knowledge based upon the foundation knowledge that you obtained. Well, Dr. Ben told us that this was the law of opposites, that the ancient Africans of the Nile had built their scientific foundation and their high culture, their architects, their mathematics, their understanding of human nature, their understanding of the divine order of things, understanding the duality, polarity, and the law of opposites. And I said, oh my goodness, let me try to get into this in a heavy way, and I have all these years. So when I want to teach my students, I say, well, the law of opposites, you are the law of opposites. They said, what do you mean, Dr. J? I said, well, your mother is the thesis. She's the foundation. She met your father, who's the opposite, the antithesis, and she didn't have the wherewithal to resist his charm. And so they got together and interacted, and with good sex, you became the synthesis. And that immediately put in the hands of the youngsters so they understand we can use these concepts and these references and these building blocks to deal with things. And so with Dr. Ben, he had the question of land, labor, and resources. And the land, the Nile Valley, produced the land that became one of the fertilest parts of the human family. The whole Nile was of Eden. And so land, resources, the multiple crops that came out of the overflow of the Nile allowed for a certain great amount of riches, land, labor, and resources. You needed labor to work the land. So you began to see that the ancient Africans of the Nile, by the forces of nature, were forced to produce a high culture and civilization that was diverse and had multiple dimensions. And then the law of opposites, the female and the male principle. Dr. Beck talked about that. You can't talk about the male without the female. And when you talk about male deities or God figures, you have to talk about female figures in God. And then you talk about the Trinity. The Africans were the first to come up with a meaningful Trinity. And the Trinity of mother, father, child became, as you correctly pointed out, Isis the mother. That's the Greek term. Osiris the father. And the child was Horus. As we began to get deeper into the Nile, Dr. Ben said we need to get into the African nomenclature and the names that the Africans. So Isis, the Greek name for the mother in the African, was Aset. And Osiris, the Greek term for the father, and the African term was Asar. And the child Horus in the Greek term became, in the African Kemetic terms, Heru. So the first significant known trinity in human history goes back thousands and thousands of years before our modern trinities that come out of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And so Dr. Ben, by putting this enormous truth together, challenged us to look at the existing bodies of knowledge and to put an African foundation under all of it. And that's the great contribution he made. He's the gift that keeps on giving. And the beauty of it, it became his whole life's work. He started out in the 30s to begin to do this. And in fact, his first trip to the Nile was when I was born in Newark, New Jersey, on Central Avenue in 1937, January. Within a year, Dr. Ben, in 38, he was heading toward the Nile by himself to claim it for our people. And over the years and the decades and the multiple decades, thousands and thousands joined him in reclaiming the Nile. He's the gift that keeps on giving. And we need to study his history, not just his fundamental works, but we need to study his life and what he did. We study Harriet Tubman, and we know she went down and freed herself after freeing herself and went back into enslavement and freed over and over again African peoples. She could have freed more if they had only realized they were in enslavement. And she took a pistol to make sure that she didn't get stopped, even by those who didn't want to come out of slavery. It was either freedom or death. Well, in that context of fighting for our people out of slavery, Dr. Ben fought out of a global context. All of our history had been smothered by whiteness and other cultures, and he removed all of that. Again and again and again and again, bringing us the information. Published so many books. I have two of them in my hand right here. A monumental work called The Black Man of the Nile and His Family. And the beautiful thing is that when he first wrote it in about 1970, he wrote The Black Man of the Nile. But then some of our women scholars and activists said, well, Doc, what about us? And so he rewrote it. So in 1973, it was republished again, The Black Man of the Nile and His Family, to make sure that the female and the children were included in the process. So the brother was extraordinary. We will be indebted to him forever. The next book I have, Kate, another thick, monumental book, is Africa, Mother of Western Civilization. And then you say to yourself, uh-oh, you mean to tell me Africa was not only the mother of African civilization, it was the mother of Western civilization? And on the cover, and on the cover is a triangle. And, of course, the symbols of various institutions, including the Masonic institutions, and the symbols of the ancient Hebrews. So on this cover you see a symbol of the all-seeing eye that's ancient African, but of course it was taken in by others, and the all-seeing eye is on the American dollar bill on top of a pyramid.
That's right.
And then if you go further down in Dr. Ben's symbolism, you'll see the bird turning back, the concept of Sankofa, go back and fetch it. Then there's another symbol of the Ankh, the symbol of life, and under that is a symbol of the star, which we call the Star David, which is a part of ancient African culture before there was a Star David. And then there is the crescent star and Islam. So what he's saying is that Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Greek civilization, Roman civilization, all have a foundation upon which they have to acknowledge Africa. Extraordinary, marvelous, wonderful. And that was
according to, I'm looking at Ivan Van Sertima, who, you know, his book, The African Presence in Ancient Africa, and when I interviewed him on WIP, you know, of course, he gave me the present of the book. And when do you think that he, was he ever talking to or talked or had conversations with Dr. Ben, do you know, because he quoted him a lot also?
For the work that he did in reference to the African presence in the Nile Valley, that's Van Sertima's work. I'm sorry, the African presence in America, that is Van Sertima's work. He was the consummate scholar. He said you always have to have proof, and when he talks about the heads found in Mexico and the Yucatan Peninsula and in Guatemala and other places, he made sure that he put several tests, anthropological tests, archaeological tests, paleontological tests, and linguist tests, and arts and culture. Even the hair braiding on the back of the sculpture, he acknowledged as one of the evidential proofs of the 12 proofs of the African presence. That is Van Sertima's work. What he did was, because of the African presence, he had to trace back where did this presence come from. And that first took him to West Africa, to Mali. Yeah. And then as you trace back the roots of Mali civilization and civilization West Africa, then you cross Africa and you go into the Nile Valley. So he had two giant projects, Professor Ivan Van Sertima. The New World project of the African presence, and then he just went full blast into Africa. He traveled to Africa in order to do his PhD work, and at the same time he did a dictionary on Swahili culture, and he never got the support for the anthropological work in Africa that he needed, because people were afraid that we were uncovering too much.
Yeah.
But he, with the help of his family, including his wives and his associates, was able to produce the Journal of African Civilization, and many issues of the initial journal became full-blown books. Like one journal issue was Egypt Revisited, and I did an article in that journal on the great work by Cheikh Anta Diop, which had only come out in French, and because I'm a French speaker and French scholar in that sense, I was able to translate the book and then do a essay for Van Sertima's journal. Eventually, he expanded that Journal of Egypt Revisited and produced a full-blown book of 300 or 400 pages, along with other scholars like Dr. Asa Hilliard and Professor Rinoco Rashidi, and a whole host of others, and he was able to produce a large volume, Egypt Revisited. One of his great works, and Dr. Ben wanted to say that science and medicine comes out of our cultures. The overflow of the Nile forced Africans into dimensions that normally would not have occurred. The overflow of the Nile forced you into anticipating when the Nile would take place. So in order to that, you couldn't put your ear to the ground. But if you looked up and you read the heavenly bodies, and the Africans were stargazers and astronomers, and they had an astronomy, a study of the skies, And so you could see that when that Nile began to rise with its annual overflow, there's a set of stars in this part of the heaven. And then after the Nile overflows its banks, that set of stars is in another part of the heaven. And then after 4 months of fertilizing the Nile Valley, that same set of stars is in another part of the heaven. Then you can plant your crop, and after a period of time, the set of stars will reveal that your harvest is due. And so the reading of the stars produced a divine order of the universe, and it reflected on earth a divine order. And so the Africans paid respect to this blessing from the divine order that was actually happening in the gardens of Eden throughout the Nile Valley. The Africans paid respect to their concept of what was God and its many dimensions. So there was a god of the Nile called God Happy. That's where God Happy dwells. Dr. Ben always told us, and he said it's not in the Delta area. God Happy doesn't dwell in the middle of the Nile, 1,000 or 1,500 miles down. It doesn't dwell in the 2,500. It dwells all the way down into the Great Lakes region of Central Africa. So he was teaching us geography and astronomy and science and all of these things because, you know, he had a scientific background. He had some architectural training, some engineering training. His father was an Ethiopian diplomat and encouraged his son to go into these multiple challenges. And so his life needs to be studied. There needs to be several books on Dr. Ben. Not any of the difficult things he was involved in, because he was a difficult brother, very complex, highly motivated, and was ready to kick butt in a minute. But he had a mission and purpose, and I mean physical kick butt. I've been in situations where we had to jump at him and pull him away from that he was ready to go at. And we had to do the same thing when we went to the Nile Valley. The first time I went with him was 1982. We took about 200. Because the First World Alliance had coordinated with him in 79. They set up an Africana School of Knowledge where he taught courses, and Dr. Clark taught courses to the community. And then he was continually taking small groups to the Nile. But once he hooked up with the First World, it became groups of hundreds. So I went with him in 81, and there was about 250 of us. In 82, there was an even larger group, and I went. In 83, I was working with the World Council of Churches translating Shekhanta Diop's book, so I didn't go to Africa, to the Nile in 83, but I did go to Zimbabwe twice in the fall, actually taking Mrs. Coretta Scott King and Marty King III to be represent our struggle in Zimbabwe. But three or four of my staff members, Dr. Ben and the First World Alliance, made sure that Professor James Smalls went, Professor Jeannie Bain went, Professor Jerry Price went, Professor Edward Scobie went. That is the beauty of the brother and the generosity of the brother. A good part of my main staff went to the Nile for nothing so that they could be enlightened and come back, give us the word in our classes. And as a result, we developed the largest Black Studies program in the history of the world. 82 courses on the books, starting with courses dealing with Nile Valley civilization and culture, 50 to 60 courses every semester taught, a faculty of 22 faculty positions, and 15 of them tenured. Because we had this information, we knew we could put it out there in the academy, and the white-dominated academy, a Jewish-dominated academy, acknowledged this, and they didn't resist the tenure given to these scholars that we had on staff. They gave them the tenure because they had the books and they had the works like Dr. Ben had that gave them the privilege of becoming a permanent member of the faculty. But at that point in 82 and the growing number of people going, Dr. Ben took the initiative again and he said, so many of us are going, so many of us want to go, and there's so much information exploding on the Nile Valley, we need to have an organization to deal with it. and we need to get the African scholars together, the African scholars from the Caribbean, America, and from Europe and from the continent, and we need to form a collection, a family of scholars. And that he put out in 82 and 83. By 83, it was picked up by Dr. Milana Karanga and Dr. Jacob Carruthers, and they said, let's make it happen. So they called forth for a conference in 84 in Los Angeles. 500 or 600 of us went. Dr. Ben was especially honored by Dr. Karanga and Dr. Carruthers for his great work. It was at that time that we decided to form an association, and many of us met at the back of the hall, and we said we're going to do it. The idea was born in 84, thanks to Dr. Ben, our commander-in-chief in the struggle for the African mind. We said we would meet in Chicago next year, and we would incorporate. That was done under the leadership of Dr. Jacob Carruthers, who had been back and forth into the Nile and studying the languages and culture of the Nile. After we did that in 85, with Dr. Ben making an outrageous speech at the banquet, and by outrageous, I mean he put his ideas out. When you have that pyramid, at the top of the pyramid, I have what I call the capstone. And the capstone is a pyramid within a pyramid. And that capstone relates to concepts, analysis, processes, and a circle around it, the triangle, to represent systems. Well, Dr. was dealing with one of his concepts. And here we are in a banquet trying to be all sedity and with our ladies and properly and highly dressed, high fashion. And he opened up his presentation with, heaven is found between the legs of a black woman. Mouths dropped. And people said, what's going on? And they didn't realize that is Dr. Ben, shock effect. I have on the wall of my living room, Rosalind and I, Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, my beautiful, wonderful wife of more than 50 years, we have a beautiful African Nile Valley tapestry that was woven in Egypt, and it's the image of the goddess Nut, N-U-T, stretched across the sky. Her hands... Yes.
Listen, I hate to interrupt you, but
No, you don't. You just love it.
What? No, but we're also scheduled for us next week to continue this. Now, Wayne Gilman is going to be calling in, and so is Eric going to be asking you some things. So we wanted to start with, you know, leave up some space for that. So we're going to be telling Wayne that it's now time for him to call in, so we can get him on the air. People know Wayne. He is also a co-host here and a producer here on State Hudson Live. And we're so glad that to have you on, because there's so much more that you have to talk about. And I
well,
get that.
Right. And it's all woven. Yes.
Yeah.
And we want to thank you for initiating the process of making sure that Great Brothers particular history and glory is maintained and sustained, and the young people can appreciate what he was saying.
But he was talking about a
philosophical concept when he mentioned the woman. He was not talking about sex. He was talking about the sky is like the woman because it births the stars and the sun. And so once you got past your shock, you got into the concepts and the analyses and the processes and the systems. Yes.
Boy.
So from that 83 activity, we actually formed an organization in 84, 85. It was incorporated in Chicago. 86, they came to New York. And that's when there was a reconciliation between Ivan Van Sertima and Dr. Ben, because there had been a disconnect. And we have pictures of them greeting each other and sharing the podium together. And at that conference, which was held at City College, I suggested that we take this explosion of information to our people and take a pilgrimage to the Nile Valley. And it was so exciting that 1,000 of us the next year went to the Nile Valley.
Let me just stop you for a minute. Len, let me just stop you for
yes.
a minute. Just to let Wayne know that we're waiting for him to call in, if he's going to be calling in. And he should do that now because we are running out of time. And I know he wanted to talk to you also. And so does Eric. And we have, you know, still some time because we still have to talk to you about a whole lot of other things. I want to know when was your first trip to Egypt? And what is the significance with Egypt when Dr. Ben took, a whole group of people with Gil Noble to see these different monuments and such, you know, the Sphinxes, and which is absolutely amazing because he did show a lot of that on Like It Is.
Yes, well, what we have to with myself and my wife, we're long-distance runners. Just as Dr. Ben went in 38 and Dr. Clark went in 58.
Yeah.
My wife, 1960, to West Africa. I went in 1961, and then we met, and then we eventually married in 64, and the rest is history. But Dr. Ben's large groups started in 79, going to the Nile, with more than just 30 or 40. He started going with hundreds. And then I went with him on the trip that was 81, and it changed my life. I had been involved fully in the history of our people for decades and decades. But Dr. Ben says, no matter how much African history you know, if you don't laser beam into the Nile Valley, you miss the power play. That's where the power is. You have to include that with your perspective on African history. And once I saw it, I have not missed a beat in terms of struggle and power. And so 81 we went, 82 we went. He took half my staff in 83. 84 I went with him. 85 we had decided to set up this organization. I went back with him. 86 I went with him. And that's when I called for a pilgrimage to the Nile. And that's when we said we're going to go to the Nile in 87. And that's when Dr. Richard King went, Gil Noble went, and I had a chance to get a ticket for Gil, even though ABC wouldn't support his going. Gil was depressed, and I used to go drive past his house on 7, and I used to do an African mojo, some little voodoo, you're going to go, Gil, you're going to go. And because my mother lived in Montclair, so whenever I went to see my mother, on my way back to Teaneck, I'd go past Gil's house and do a little mojo. But it wasn't working. And I said, well, maybe I need to go inside. And so I started ringing the bell and going inside. And Gene said, Len, we're glad you're here. Gil wants to go, but ABC is not supportive. And so he's depressed. So I said, uh-oh, I better up my little African spiritual power. And I tried the best that I could do. And nothing worked. However, don't give up if you're African. We come from a long way from the beginning of time before slavery.
Len,
and what? And now we're rising again.
Before we have to end this, before we have to end this, I want you to tell about the arrangement for Dr. Ben. You know, we're getting mixed messages about when it's going to be.
Okay, I just want to say that what happened with Gil, a sister could not go, a sister named Jenkins. So she said, Dr. J, take this ticket and do something with it. So the next time I went to Gil's house and he said, oh, I don't know what to do. I said, Gil, you're going to the Nile. He said, oh, and then I reached into my coat pocket and pulled out the ticket. And Gil went, and the rest is history. He went back several times with Dr. Ben. The arrangement with Dr. Ben, some people had hoped that it could be this weekend, Friday and Saturday, but the family met at Dr. Clark's house with us, and they said the family is 100 plus, and it's too quick to notify them from the various parts of the country and the Western Hemisphere, the Caribbean and whatnot, to come. So it was agreed that there will not be cremation, he will be buried, and that the funeral activity will be in 3 weeks, thereabout, in April. The period from April the 9th, 10th, and 11th will be when the activities will take place. Friday, I believe, is the 10th, and Saturday may be the 11th, and that's when We hope Reverend Butts and the Abyssinia, we have to thank them for making their church available. But once the change was taking place, we had to ask them again after Easter, was it possible? And from I talked to the secretary, Professor Small, and Brother Reggie were there, and she called to get confirmation from me. So the family has agreed to do it during that period of time. And hopefully we'll be at Abyssinian, and people will have a chance to express some love for this great brother.
We have another caller on the line that we're saying, will you say something? Hello.
Hi, Kay.
Wayne
Gilman here. All right, it's good to hear your voice, Dr. Jeffries.
Well, the thing is, I've lost my voice. I was at a big conference organization that Dr. Ben helped us form, had a conference in Seattle, Washington, and on Sunday I went a little off, and I instead of doing my usual hour and a half, I did 3 hours. And it was so exciting to see so many of the activities going on. And we raised money on behalf of Dr. Ben to help support these activities, because the family just buried the mother of most of Dr. Ben's children several months ago.
Oh.
And they don't have the money for this major celebration of his life. And so arrangements are being made for people who can make a contribution to do just that. And at the conference, several thousand dollars were raised so that our organization, his organization, is able to show some love and also to participate in a real celebration of his life. It will not stop.
That's excellent. I was just because I was unable to hear the show from the beginning. And I don't want to repeat everything because I know how that could be. But exactly how old was he when he passed?
He was the old man by the Nile. And he passed at 97.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
He was trying to catch up with Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark left at 85, but this year is Dr. Clark's 100th birthday. He was born 1915. Dr. Ben was born in 1918, I believe. And so Dr. Ben and we will be celebrating the whole year, Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark. So there'll be a lot of activities. So this is not the end for us and for you and Kay and her son. This is just the beginning for us to lay out this extraordinary figure in history. There'll never be another one like him. And
that's
so we
true.
Need to have young people understand they've been blessed with the blessing that keeps on, with a gift that keeps on giving from this brother.
Unfortunately, we have about, I think it was about 10 minutes. It's 8:49.
Hey, we're lucky to be here. We could all be in the ancestral realm. The question was, where to bury this great brother?
Yeah.
Some people thought it would be fitting to take his ashes to the Nile. Others said, we would like to have him here and create a special place where we could pay homage. And so it was decided, whether the family will affirm it, that remains to be seen. But it was decided to get a grave site in Arsley, New York, at the Ferncliff Cemetery, where Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz buried, and their annual pilgrimage to them. A few hundred yards away is the burial site of, not even a few hundred yards away, but on the other side of the mausoleum is Paul Robinson and his wonderful wife. And across the road, down into a little valley, is Dr. Khalid Muhammad. So a grave site has been purchased and is being arranged so that he can be there where we can take a pilgrimage and meet and greet his legacy and his ancestral spirituality.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Jeffries, because, you know, I guess there must have been so much confusion as to where he should be interned. And I for a long time, thought it was going to be the Schomburg Library. I felt that for some special arrangement would have been made there because he was such a fixture in Harlem in that particular corner. But as you mentioned, Ferncliff, that is a beautiful cemetery. A beautiful venue. I mean, Betty and Dr. Betty Shabazz and Malcolm, they're right there at the beginning. As soon as you open the gates, the gravesite
so
is right there. So
it's fitting that we honor him. And the Schomburg, unfortunately, is part of the New York City Public Library System. It's in Harlem. Its founding was related to Arturo. It's by Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben, a African Puerto Rican. However, the New York City power structure controls what happens at the Schomburg and other public libraries. Dr. Ben's work was too strong, too black, too serious. It meant that you had to put the Greeks into the context of worshiping the Africans. You have to deal with what Kay was talking about earlier, the context of the black Madonna. All over the Catholic world, there are black Madonnas. And in the African tradition, it comes out of Isis, which is really, in the African, Aset, and her child, Horus, which is really Heru. And even the statue in Rio of Jesus the Redeemer is placed on a pedestal in which there is the shrine of the Black Madonna. I went there in 2003. The shrine of the Black Madonna, Jesus the Redeemer, is standing on the shrine of the Black Madonna to affirm the Africanness of those great religious faiths. Pope John Paul II from Poland knew that the patron saintess of Poland was the shrine of Częstochowa, the Black Madonna of Częstochowa. And when he was almost assassinated, he had the shrine brought to his bedside for curing. Everywhere in the Catholic world, there's a shrine of the Black Madonna to the Mother of Humanity.
Wow.
And Dr. Ben raised it. He raised it so hard that people didn't like it because he was beating up on people. Dr. Ben took no prisoners. Dr. Clark and I, and Ben Sertima and the rest of us, Dr. Asa Hayes, some of our great sisters, including my wife, we like to take prisoners. Dr. Ben said, no, it's a bloody mess. Let's get him out of the way. And he just went for the jugular. And we'll talk about that at another point. Because he had been to hell himself. And so he was revisiting that on others. He was too black and too proud to fit within our culture. Even among black people, we have an important and significant mulatto component to our culture. If you're light, you're right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, jump way back. And as a kid, we used to play that little ditty when we used to do the dozens in Newark, New Jersey. Well, Dr. Ben had it visited upon him heavily, unfortunately, in a family situation among a mulatto part of his family in Puerto Rico. However, the love of mother, his beautiful Puerto Rican mother, helped to restore him and allow him to deliver for us. He could have been a bitter, disgruntled person who killed somebody, but instead he tried to kill white supremacy. And because he could see it, even when he came to New York and he went to the Latin part of Upper Manhattan, he felt the pain of racism. And so when he moved across Manhattan and he came into Harlem, he was accepted as a beautiful black brother who had something to do with the future, and he showed that he could do it. And so it would be beautiful if he could be accepted into Arturo Schomburg's center, because Dr. Ben had an Ethiopian family background and a Caribbean, a Puerto Rican background. So
it is
very fitting. But the politics, our higher education systems are designed to worship the Greeks. I went to Columbia, I got 2 degrees, the first to get a master's in African studies, along with a white fellow, Dick Hall and Afuete Kojo. And then I went on for the PhD. I had to go into Butler Library for years. And this is a pillar temple reflecting the pillar temples in Greece. But the pillar temples in Greece, BC 400 BC and 300 BC were copies of the African pillar temples that were built 1500 BC, 2500 and 3000 BC. So the Greek temples were copies of the African great spiritual temples and learning institutions. On the pillars of each of those pillars at Butler Library is a Greek name, Homer, Herodotus, Socrates, Phococrates, Blocrates, all of them are there, not a single African. However, in the African tradition of the pillar temples don't represent individuals. They represent philosophical concepts. In the Great Lodge of Luxor, the Great Pillar Temple, in which most of these temples are copied, the Great Center Hall has 44 columns. Each column represents a moral and ethical principle. The so-called Ten Commandments comes out of that.
Yeah.
The other traditions come out of that. And it was called the affirmation of innocence. I have not killed. I have not spoken a negative word. I have not stolen. And the pillars, the building structure of Africa, Africans, is a philosophical statement, not just the worship of individuals.
Dr. Len Jenkins,
I'm running out of steam, so you're just in time.
And also running out of time, unfortunately, but you are going to be with us next week again.
And I'll be in better shape, so you better get through. Thank you very much. In the Akan tradition, we would say, Madasi, Madasi, thank you, many, many thanks. I'll be ready. I'll be in better form next week. Thank you.
Okay, now. I know you have a little call.
Yes,
but
stay well, please. We need you.
So we'll talk to you again, Len. Thank you so much.
All right, now.
Yeah, okay. So, Len.
The struggle continues.
Yeah, Wayne.
Yes,
Wayne.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we're going to be having Dr. Jeffries on again next week.
We have to get him on film. I mean, he's like the only one left now, you know? It's amazing.
Well, I have the Dr. Van Sertimer, Dr. Len Gunther, Dr. Clark, and Dr. Ben, you know, on the show together, you know, when I was doing cable television. And a lot of the videos of Dr. Ben on a one-on-one with, you know, me on Telemundo and so forth and so on. So we have a lot of information. And then also some of the stuff that, you know, Mal was able to, you know, save for us from the WLIV show. So, you know, we're going to be going off the air. Thanks for calling in, Wayne.
Okay. I mean, the thing, you know what? It slipped my mind. I fell asleep. I'm sorry. You know, I know you wanted me to call late, but, you know, I can only imagine how powerful the show has been.
Yeah, the music is coming on, Wayne. Thanks.
Okay, then. Sure. Okay. I need Geritol. I know. Take care.
This has been K-Town's Alive here on blogtalkradio.com/K-Town's Alive, lowercase, everybody.